Welcome to Mingwei Radio's Falun Dafa podcast, bringing you a window into the lives of Falun Dafa practitioners across China and throughout the world. Stories include first-hand accounts from practitioners who face persecution in China, as well as insights and experiences gained by practitioners during the course of their cultivation.
The following is an experience-sharing article entitled Remaining Unmoved Despite the Persecution by a Falun Dafa practitioner in China. The article was published on the Minghui website on March 14, 2024. I've practiced Falun Dafa for 26 years. Although I've faced many tribulations, my firm belief in Master and Dafa has never wavered. I was born in the late 1950s, and when I was a young child, our elderly neighbors passed away. This really frightened me, and I began asking my parents and other adults why people die and whether a person could avoid death. I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful if there were a way to become immortal? I read all kinds of books on this and related topics, and was especially attracted to the mystical ones. When I looked at the stars at night, I would think, there can't be only one planet with human beings. There must be many beings in this vast universe. Being brought up in China and indoctrinated with the Chinese Communist Party's atheism and evolutionary theory, I didn't believe in the existence of gods or Buddhists. I thought monks were just people who chose to escape to temples when they encountered setbacks in their lives. I thought they wanted to escape reality. When I was on a business trip in Mount Hua, I had a chance to chat with a young Taoist monk. He said that he'd chosen to become a monk because he failed the college entrance exams and he was under too much pressure. This conversation confirmed what I had believed. I had always been frail and sickly, and I tried to stay healthy by exercising. Qigong became popular in the 1990s, and when I saw it, I thought I'd give it a try. I bought an expensive, small Qigong book and tried to practice along with it, but I found the content very strange. Promoters of this practice urged me to try the so-called second-level and third-level exercises. It became clear that they were after my money, so I quit after a while. Around that time, someone mentioned Falun Dafa. But I heard that practitioners of Falun Dafa quit smoking and drinking, and I thought it would be much too demanding for me. Part 1. Reborn After Practicing Dafa. My younger brother, his wife, and my father all started practicing Falun Dafa in 1997. One day, my brother put a copy of Juan Falun on the table. I picked it up and was immediately attracted to what I read. While I read the book, I felt that my forehead was stretching, and when I came to the section about the celestial eye, I understood Master was opening my celestial eye. I was so excited and I felt very fortunate. I read the entire book that same night. Juan Falun changed my way of thinking. In it, Master talks about Buddhism, Taoism, gods, other dimensions, higher beings, and the meaning of life. I was completely convinced. The atheism and evolutionary theory that had been instilled in me by the CCP collapsed and was eliminated. I felt refreshed and transformed. I was a salesperson and often entertained customers by smoking and drinking with them. But after reading Juan Falun, I thought I would quit smoking, and I decided that I'd quit drinking as well when the weather got cooler. One day, I bought 2 bottles of beer and made some food. I poured 1 glass and drank it, and after I poured the 2nd glass of beer, the glass cracked in half with a loud sound. I knew that Master was telling me I shouldn't drink. During business meetings, I told everyone that I practiced Falun Dafa now and had decided to stop drinking, and no one pressured me to drink. At that time, Falun Dafa was widely practiced in China, with practice sites in many parks and public areas. On a business trip to Nancheng, I went to Baiyi Park to do the exercises in the morning. A practitioner saw that I was new and greeted me. Hearing my northeastern accent, he said, "Oh, you're from Master's hometown." I said that I was from Liaoning province, while Master was from Changchun, which is in Jilin province. He said it was still Master's hometown, northeast China. The pious look on his face really touched me. The next day, another assistant noticed that I was there from out of town. He told me where the exercise site and Fa study were, and that Master's lecture from the Fa conference in Germany would be played later on. He asked me if I wanted to go, and I immediately said yes. I never expected that I would be so fortunate as to watch a recording of Master's overseas lecture while I was on a business trip. Master said in Explaining the Fa for Falun Dafa Assistants in Changchun, quote, "I'd say that our Falun Dafa is a pure land here," unquote. I really missed that wonderful time. Falun Dafa practitioners were like one big family. When I went to Jiujiang, I found a local practice site near the river. It was quite chilly in the morning, and a female practitioner brought me an extra cushion and blanket. Everyone there was so friendly, and that evening I joined in their group Fa study. Most of them were elderly, and they read each word of the Fa very carefully. They were so pious, it was really touching. Part 2. Safeguarding Dafa. On July 20, 1999, the CCP set in motion all of the state's machinery, slandering Dafa. Many practitioners were arrested. Dafa was being persecuted, and Master was slandered as well. Dafa had really blessed me, and Master had purified my body and improved my morality. I knew that I must speak up for Dafa, so I decided to go to Beijing. Two fellow practitioners decided to join me. The three of us went to Beijing on October 8th. We met up with another group of practitioners the next day and went to the National Public Complaints and Proposals Administration. On the way back to the hotel, we were stopped by several plainclothes officers claiming that they were from the Haidian Public Security Bureau. They pushed us into a van. We later learned that the hotel clerk had reported us to the police. I told one of the officers that being a good person and following the principles of truthfulness, compassion, forbearance was good for China and good for its people. We didn't understand why the Chinese government was persecuting us. We just came to Beijing to speak up for Dafa, and all we wanted was to practice in peace. The police listened quietly, and it was obvious that they did not agree with the persecution. Because so many Falun Dafa practitioners had been arrested, the detention center released all of the other prisoners. We all recited the Fa, practiced the exercises, and discussed our cultivation experiences. We realized that as practitioners, we should not passively endure the persecution, so we went on a collective hunger strike to protest our treatment. The police saw how united practitioners were and admired us. Soon, practitioners were taken back to their local police stations. The police there threatened us and tried to find out who organized the hunger strike. They didn't believe me when I told them there was no leader. I said that we were practitioners cultivating the same Dafa. We were all good people and benefited society, but we were being unfairly persecuted. We were illegally detained for 15 days. After I was released, my boss told me, "I had tried to visit you while you were at the detention center, but the police said that Falun Dafa practitioners were not allowed to have visitors." He whispered, "The Public Security Bureau made us fire you on paper, but don't worry about it. I just did that to fool them." There were 12 salesmen at my workplace, and most of them misappropriated or embezzled company money. I was the only clean one. In fact, before I practiced Falun Dafa, I was just like everyone else. After I started practicing, I followed truthfulness, compassion, and forbearance, and I paid back all the money I had embezzled. I even paid back more money that I had stolen that even the accountants were unaware of. Therefore, people at my workplace had a good impression of Dafa practitioners. Part 3. Saving People. At that time, it was hard to get any truth clarification materials. Whenever I got a copy, I made as many copies of it as I could, and I distributed them so that people could know the truth. As the persecution escalated, local authorities ordered the photocopy shops to stop copying our materials. What should I do? I thought. I looked for other ways to make copies and ended up using the fax machine at work. I bought all the paper and made a large number of truth-clarifying materials when no one was around. I also mailed out truth-clarification letters to various government departments, especially to the National People's Congress, the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference, and democratic parties so they could understand the truth, reduce the persecution, and give themselves a chance to be saved. One day, two plainclothes officers from the Municipal Public Security Bureau came to my workplace and said they wanted to check practitioners' handwriting and find out who had mailed the letters. Perhaps the security camera caught me mailing them. The office secretary overheard their conversation and told me, "Leave! The municipal police are here and are investigating you." Immediately I left, and I wondered if I should go into hiding. Other practitioners had left home to avoid the persecution, but I didn't want to do that. If I ran away, my neighbors and co-workers would think that Falun Dafa practitioners were frightened. I went home and nothing happened. Officers from the Municipal Public Security Bureau came to my workplace in April of 2000 and wanted to arrest me, but I was able to escape. My supervisor said, "The CCP, they're using a cannon to fight mosquitoes." People who knew the truth were disgusted by the CCP's persecution. I passed a remote mountainous area in early 2013, and I noticed that some villages had fewer than 20 households. I learned that practitioners there had not had any truth-clarifying materials for 3 years, and some small villages had no practitioners. I contacted some practitioners in my area, and we decided to go there and distribute information about Dafa. At that time, I worked as a designer, and using the internet, I planned our routes in advance. I tried not to leave out a single village. Sometimes we would drive into the villages, but some mountain villages were sparsely populated, and almost every house had a dog, which barked when we arrived. When they heard the barking, some villagers came to their doors and asked us for the truth clarification materials. The calendar was especially popular, and they often asked for multiple copies, saying they wanted to give them to their relatives and friends. Many practitioners came with us, and even the elderly practitioners walked along the rugged mountain roads in the dark of night. Despite the cold in winter, the scorching heat, and mosquitoes in the summer, everyone was eager to save more people. According to local practitioners, the villagers loved the truth clarification materials. They shared them and discussed what they had read. Many kind-hearted people understood the truth. This was Master's mercy, not leaving anyone behind. Part 4. Validating Dafa in a detention center. I was arrested and taken to a detention center. The detainees were forced to make certain handmade products, and during the breaks, I took the opportunity to clarify the truth to the detainees. I told them how quitting the CCP will ensure safety and bring blessings. One of the inmates said that Falun Dafa is good and quit the CCP's youth league. He was an older man and was often bullied by one of the other inmates. The work he was assigned was always difficult and he was very distressed. The day after he quit the CCP, he came to me and said, "These blessings came so fast." He told me that the young man who was bullying him had been transferred that night. The job assigned to him the next day had been very easy and he finished it quickly. And he added, "I really received blessings thanks to Dafa." Sometimes the detainees tested me. One day, one of them asked me, "Why do you want to suffer here? You can leave as soon as you write a pledge not to practice Dafa and then you can just keep practicing when you get out." I said, "I can't write that." And he said, "Then they will sentence you to 3 or 5 years. I told him that before I practiced Dafa, I had suffered from many illnesses. Dafa saved me. How could I do things that were disrespectful to Dafa and Master? He was silent. The next day, I heard someone calling my name, and I saw two officers coming, one in civilian clothes and one in uniform. The officer in uniform said, "Don't tell me about Falun Dafa. If you want to tell someone, tell him," and pointed at the other officer. Then he asked me my name, age, address, and occupation, and where I had started practicing Falun Dafa, and who I learned it from. I said that my father had told me about it. My father was a veteran CCP member who had worked really hard for the party. When he was old and sick, he had recovered by practicing Falun Dafa. The officer asked me if I still practiced, and I said, "Of course I do. I was not in good health before, but now I am. How can I stop practicing?" He said, "With your attitude, you'll be sentenced to 3 to 5 years. But I said firmly, "I'm determined to practice Dafa." The officer in civilian clothes said, Your case is not serious. The one in uniform asked me again, so you will continue to practice? I said yes, and he asked me to sign the transcript of our conversation. The officer in civilian clothes spoke again, saying that I would go home soon, and shortly after I returned to my cell, the guard shouted at me to pack my things and get ready to go. I said goodbye to the other inmates and walked out. When I was approaching the gate, the older detainee who had quit the CCP shouted at me, "Falandafa is good! Falandafa is good! Falandafa is good!" He shouted 3 times, and his voice was heard by everyone in the dozen cells in the corridor.
The following is an experience-sharing article entitled "The Sacred Flower Bloomed Again" by a Falandafa practitioner in China. The article was published on the Mingwei website on March 27, 2024. Even though I only had a superficial understanding of the Fa teachings when I first began cultivating in 1997, I knew Falandafa was special, especially since I recovered from all my illnesses soon after I began practicing Dafa. My husband, sister-in-law, and mother-in-law also began to practice Dafa, and we read the Fa and discussed our cultivation experiences every evening. We felt immersed in the Fa, and our lives became meaningful. Part 1. Appealing for Falun Dafa. The unprecedented persecution of Falun Dafa began in July 1999. I wept when I saw the reports on television that slandered Dafa and Master that were being broadcast continuously. In October 1999, a practitioner in our study group and I went to Beijing to appeal. A local practitioner picked us up from the train station and took us to a big house in the suburbs. Many practitioners from all over China were there, studying the Fa and discussing what they would do. Some went directly to the petition office, while others went to Tiananmen Square to do the exercises. Some came back and said the petition office had taken down the sign and practitioners were being arrested. 2 days after we arrived, another practitioner and I went to Tiananmen Square. We didn't have a sign or banner, so we just stood in front of the Tiananmen Square monument and recited Lun Yu aloud. It felt like time stopped. Even the air was still. It was as if everything around me was quietly listening to me reciting. I finally spoke up for Dafa. I wasn't concerned for my safety. I just wanted to seek justice for Dafa. The police ignored us. We went to a nearby noodle cafe to eat. We returned to Tiananmen Square, sat down by the Jinshui Bridge, and recited Hong Yin. A police car came by, and we were shoved into it. I was in prison in the Qinghe Detention Center. Police from my city and the 610 office personnel brought me back to my hometown on the third day. I was illegally detained for 30 days. The village leaders and the 610 office staff pressured me to sign a guarantee statement to stop practicing Falun Dafa, but I refused. They claimed I could go home if I signed and promised not to go to Beijing to appeal. I clarified the truth to them. I told them how practicing Falun Dafa changed my life and that every citizen has the right to petition. After they extorted 5,000 yuan from my family, I was released. Part 2. Detained in a forced labor camp. At the end of 2000, I was taken to a forced labor camp. Because I refused to transform, I was beaten so badly that I lost my hearing for months. I was repeatedly tortured and placed in solitary confinement. They hung me on an iron cage with my limbs spread apart. They poured hot chili water over me. I choked on it and had difficulty breathing. They kept hitting my lower body with the back of a chair to increase my pain. They repeatedly struck the insteps of my feet with a wooden board studded with nails. I thought about Master and Dafa and silently said, "Master, save me." They eventually stopped. I was made to work for 12 or 13 hours every day. To force me to transform, they threatened me every day. Looking back, it would have been impossible for me to withstand the abuse and intense pressure without the support of Dafa's principles. I recited Master's teachings every day. Many practitioners were transformed every day. I was anxious and thought, how could practitioners believe in the nonsense repeated by those people? Master asks us to remember the Fa. I later understood that it would have been very difficult for me to not give in to the intense pressure if I didn't remember what Master taught us. At that time, I read and memorized more than 10 new articles published by Master, including Dafa Disciples' Righteous Thoughts Are Powerful, Fa Rectification, period, Dafa Disciples, Dafa is Indestructible, and Path. Because I refused to transform or sign anything, my term was extended to 3 months. I was released in March 2004. Part 3. Udambara Flowers Bloom. In 2005, other practitioners showed me how to download from the internet and print materials. I bought an HP laser printer to print the 9 commentaries on the Communist Party. Udambara flowers soon began blooming in my home, and did so for more than 10 years. I was always able to produce all the materials the other practitioners needed. I was arrested again in 2016, sentenced to 4 years in prison, and incarcerated in the Liaoning Province Women's Prison. They began pressuring me to transform as soon as I arrived at the prison. Because I refused, I was punished by being made to stand every day from morning to evening. I remember what Master said in Dafa Disciples' Righteous Thoughts Are Powerful, from Essentials for Further Advancement 2. Quote, "Why should you, a Dafa disciple, fear the evil ones when enduring persecution? The crux of the matter is that you have attachments. If not, do not endure passively, and face the evil people with righteous thoughts at all times. No matter what the situation, do not cooperate with the evil's demands, orders, or what it instigates. If everyone can do that, circumstances will change." Unquote. I felt righteous thoughts strengthen after I recited Master's words. I sat down in a chair. The inmate who was assigned to watch me grabbed me and pulled me up. I just sat on the ground with my legs crossed and my eyes closed. 7 or 8 prisoners grabbed me and walked me toward the warden's office. The entire way there, I shouted, "Falun Dafa is good. Truthfulness, compassion, forbearance is good." Everyone in the workshop looked at me. Some practitioners stood up and shouted sternly, "Do not abuse practitioners." The warden yelled at me and said I was causing trouble. I told her the truth about the persecution of Falun Dafa and reminded her that one reaps what one sows. I recited Master's Fa, did the exercises, and sent righteous thoughts every day. I refused to comply with the guard's demands or do slave labor. As soon as I returned home in April 2020, I reestablished the Materials Production Center. The little Udambara flowers reappeared and bloomed again.
Thank you for listening to the Minghui Radio Podcast. For more information, including news about the persecution of Falun Gong practitioners in China and experience sharing stories by practitioners around the world, please visit our website at en.minghui.org.